Today on Straight Talk Africa, the audacity to change, breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa. Professor Michael Kaluya identifies what he calls Africa's development challenges and explores some solutions for the way forward. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on African fundamental problems and African solutions.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails and Facebook comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Backwardness in Africa, a topic of research and study by one of our guests today. And our own Paul Sisko examines why it has been so persistent and what's being done about it, if anything.
The book is called The Audacity to Change, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa. The book's author, Professor Michael D. Kaluya, born and raised in East Africa, has several degrees, including a doctorate in business administration. Today, he teaches economics, business, and management at two Texas universities. Dr. Kaluya compares the Berlin Wall that came crashing down in 1989, resulting in more social justice for the people of East Berlin, to Africa's so-called backwardness, not using the word in a derogatory manner, but metaphorically liking the Berlin Wall to the unwanted and deplorable circumstances the majority of poor Africans face every day, and the state of mind allowing it to persist. A wall can mean not only closed borders, but closed minds. Africa's wall of backwardness can be destroyed by the determination of all Africans to find solutions to its persistent poverty and the hopelessness of so many. And the aid and help of Western societies serves to create that hopeless mindset. In 2009, former U.S. President Barack Obama told the Ghanaian parliament, Africa's future is up to Africa. Africa's Berlin Wall, says Dr. Kaluya, is a state of mind characterized by hopelessness that can and must be destroyed and torn down for it to change. He says this is Africa's age of enlightenment, and now is the time to tear that wall down. Around the world, Africans must, with determination, embrace Africa's age of enlightenment and change the state of mind of ordinary citizens, elites, and its African leaders that's holding the continent back. They must find strategic ways out of its persistent backwardness, poverty, chaos, and poor governance. The Audacity to Change reminds some of Barack Obama's 2006 book, The Audacity of Hope. In it, Barack Obama outlined his vision for reclaiming the American dream. Obama's 2004 convention speech propelled him into sudden fame, with many analysts predicting he might well become a future candidate for the White House. Of course, we know how that prediction fared. Dr. Kaluya believes Obama's leadership, characterized by inclusiveness, openness, and hope, has been transformational, as is democracy in its ideal state. He calls on all Africans, especially its leaders, to embrace those qualities, incorporate the ideas of their political opponents, and believe in the true possibility of change. That can bring the continent out of its backwardness and its people, the change and the social justice and future they deserve. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, a South Sudanese politician in her own right and widow of General Dr. John Garang Dimabior, founding leader of the Republic of South Sudan. She previously served as an advisor to the President of South Sudan and as South Sudan's Minister of Roads and Transport. And Dr. Michael Kaluya, Professor of Economics, Tarrant County College, Fort Worth, Texas, is also a consultant at the Center for Public Policy and Global Business Initiatives, Grand Prairie, Texas, and author of The Audacity to Change, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa, where... To be honest with you, Rebecca and Michael, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time, by the way, on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much for having me. And you had an interview with me on maybe two occasions, but I have never come to your real show, Straight Talk Africa.
That is
very
true.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. As a matter of fact, talking about interviewing you, the last time perhaps was in Pretoria, South Africa.
Yes, yes.
At the Sheraton Pretoria.
That's right.
2009. Can you believe that?
Yes. Time has flown.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What about you, my brother?
Thank you, Shaka. I'm glad to be in the studios with you. If you didn't know this, but you are the reason why I like reading news, because my mother, when you used to broadcast on the radio, used to tell us, oh, I need to listen to Voice of America news. So everybody keep quiet.
Very interesting.
And we listen to the news. So I'm so glad to meet you in person. And I've read everything that you've been doing, the interviews that you've been doing. So I'm very, very pleased to be here. And I look forward to this.
Profoundly honored for your compliments, sir.
Thank you.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country record is 1. Let's go to the author of the book, if you don't mind, Madam Rebecca. Michael, this book, The Audacity to Change, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa, to what extent was it influenced or inspired by another book, The Audacity of Hope, by a former U.S. president, Barack Obama?
I picked up this book. Actually, I have The Audacity of Hope in my library, and I read it in its entirety. But the title captivated my mind, and I wanted to dig into what the author of The Audacity of Hope had to say about himself, about the things that he was actually talking about. And I said, he's talking about his background, he's talking about his parents, he's talking about the American dream, he's talking about everything. I'm an African who happens to be in this land, the United States, and I've gotten the opportunity to read a book that my fellow Africans have not read. What can I do? Can I write something within the lines of The Audacity of Hope? Can I try to envision some of the things that I think need to be aired out that are happening in our continent, Africa? To a large extent, I found myself digging in too much of what is going on in Africa that I think people of my caliber, the elite, the politicians, I think we need to come together and have a conversation, a real conversation, because the issues in Africa have been going on for a long time, a very, very long time. And it calls for so many of us, so many stakeholders, to come together and solve these problems.
Does it need perhaps a new paradigm shift? And if so, we are probably not talking really about reinventing the wheel.
We're not talking about reinventing the wheel, Shaka. But we have countries. Let's look at the Asian tigers. Places like Singapore, Taiwan. These are countries in the 1960s that were at the same level of development.
If not worse.
If not worse, with most of the African nations. Where are they right now? We're in our living rooms. We are watching TVs that are made from these countries. We are putting on clothes that are made from these countries. These countries had far worse GDPs than we were in the 1960s. What went wrong? Does it require a paradigm shift? No. It needs to change certain fundamentals.
Well, you are selling them minerals.
Yes.
Which they are using to make television, cell phones, and what have you, and selling back to you at exorbitant prices that you can't even afford.
Definitely.
So what is wrong with you?
Definitely. Definitely. Congo is producing these minerals. It has deposits of these minerals.
Coltan.
Coltan. We use these minerals to make cell phones. We use these minerals to do laptops. We use these minerals to do iPads. But the iPads are being made elsewhere. Why are they not being made in Congo? And why is the African person not championing the exploitation of these minerals to be made in Congo, so that Congolese can be proud and say, we have a cell phone here that is made from Congo. I would love to see something made from Congo with Congo material. I would love to see something that is made from Kenya, made in Kenya, with the Kenyan fiber, with the Kenyan materials, and everything else. But we have Congolese materials being taken out of the country, taken to other countries, and make something, and it is made in that country where it was made.
Very interesting. My sister Rebecca, the author of Audacity to Change, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa, who obviously is seated next to you, argues that part of the reason really is because of leadership deficit. Do you agree?
I agree very much.
Why?
100%. Because we elect wrong leaders to come and lead us.
Do we, in fact, even elect, in most cases, really?
But even with this imposed election on us, we are our people are blindfolded. They are giving petty money so that they can bring them to the seats. And once they come up and they climb the ladder, they push the ladder away. And they don't know when they come down, what will they use? They forget about the people. And they take the estate and the people and they own them like their own properties. This is a problem of leadership that we have. They don't go and think and say that how can we transform our society?
Mm-hmm.
For example, like cattle raidings, for example, those some of the tribes who raid cattle. For me, as Rebecca, I don't see that this is their mistakes. It is the mistakes of leadership, because you need to educate these people. But in the leadership, they think these people can be killed so that they are silent. It doesn't work like that. The way I think is for these people, they don't know what they are doing. As the Bible says that, Jesus Christ said that, my Father, forgive them,
mm-hmm.
as they don't know what they are doing. This is what happened with our leaders. We pray that God forgive them,
mm-hmm.
as they don't know what they are doing. Because you find many countries, as my brother was talking about, many countries with immense resources that God's given. When the leaders come on the seats, they own them.
Then, frankly, are they leaders, really? Or, in fact, are they something else?
This is the name given to them. This is the name English give them, that there is something. If you sit there, you are a leader. But if you cannot see your people, how can you be a leader? I will be a proud leader to see my people are happy, they are proud, they are secure, they are economically, our food sufficient. Then I'm happy, I'm a great leader, and my people will celebrate me.
You know, as I read history, I cover, Africa for that matter, I find that, in fact, there are a lot of credible leaders on the African continent before and even, in fact, during colonialism.
Mm.
So what happened to this type of servant leader? Somebody, frankly, that cares about his community, that does not make policies or does not make decisions before consulting his own people what they need.
Yeah, it happened because sometimes they come to power. They wanted to come to power. They call for something that they want to come and do. They are coming for the people. They come for development, and they have seen something wrong which has been done by previous leaders. But when they come there, they are blindfolded or they are overwhelmed with the resources of the nation. They think that this belongs to them,
mm-hmm.
because they own the army, they own the police. This is for them, and they will use it like a stick to latch the population.
Mm-hmm.
And this is at their own fingertips. They can do whatever they wanted to do with it. So they're overwhelmed with the resources that they don't even know what to do with it. Even a leader elected properly by the people, once they come to power, they forget about the people that they were calling for.
Why can't their people remind them who is the boss? Because, in fact, it is the people who are supposed to be the boss.
They are scared so much that they cannot come to my country. My people are silent, and they cannot say anything. They cannot talk. Do you fear your life?
After fighting for 50 years?
After fighting for 50 years, even those who liberated them are the one marginalizing them.
Now,
when we were in the bush fighting, we were calling for marginalization. That we have been marginalized, this was the slogan that we were carrying. And it is us, the same leaders, who are now marginalizing our own people even worse than what we call our enemy was doing to them.
Very interesting. Now we'll pause for a short break. Would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Transition. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. You know, Michael, my sister here said interesting things. One, he said that our leaders, when they get into power, they forget everything because they control, for example, the institutions of violence. We're talking about security forces, we're talking about the army, we're talking about the police. You know, there is, in fact, a leader in East Africa who actually says, my army, my money, my oil. Is that a leader of a people?
I want to address a few things about leadership. In my book, we have leaders that are there to survive. Okay? So everything that they're doing.
But are they leaders? Why don't you call them what they are?
I wouldn't call them leaders at this time. If you are a survivor.
A survivor.
You are a survivor. All you are doing is to survive.
So basically, that particular leader or that particular ruler or person is really patriotic to his stomach.
Yes.
To the stomach of his family.
Yes.
And friends.
Yes.
But not society, not community.
Yes.
Then why call him a leader or high leader?
The idea here is that I have the army, I have the money, I'm in charge of the institutions. So what am I going to do? Now it's the population is what I need to captivate. So what am I going to do? I'm dishing out money. I'm dishing out each and everything to survive. Without knowing that some of these countries, 70% of the population is youth. Are you looking down the line 10 years from now? What are you going to do with these people? Are you going to drive them out of the country for you to survive? Or you are trying to grow something that is going to balloon at one point or the other? I think this is the idea. We have leadership that is revival. Leadership. I can call it revival leadership.
Why do you call it revival?
Because it brings in a spirit of encouragement. It brings in a spirit of patriotism. It brings in a spirit that everything is going to be okay.
Patriotism or fake patriotism?
Fake patriotism is the idea of survival leadership.
You know, the types of leaders you are talking about, frankly,
yeah,
they inherited an institution.
Definitely, yes.
These institutions were colonial in nature.
Yeah.
And the colonialists were not part of Africa.
Definitely,
yes. As a matter of fact, there is a great book here called The Tyranny of Experts.
Yes.
Economists, dictators, and the forgotten rights of the poor.
Yes.
By William Easterly, a man who actually worked at the World Bank for over 30 years and is currently teaching at New York University, NYU. He basically talks about that. These people inherited the colonial institutions and they are themselves therefore, in fact, colonialists, even though they are doing it to their own people.
Yeah.
So how do you change this, really, where, in fact, you have citizens, meaning people with constitutional rights, inalienable rights, in fact, virtually birthrights, and therefore they employ a president because there is a social contract, and that president does not own them, but serves at their discretion.
Yes.
How do we do that?
We have to wake up. We have to wake up as a people of Africa. And this is, we have to forget about these leaders and rise up. How do we rise up? Most of these leaders have gone to the bush. They have gone and come back with guns. I'm not saying that it's time for us to go to the bush and come with the guns. But I need us to start talking and talking to these leaders and they talking loudly. Do everything we have in our powers to say that what you're doing is wrong. It does not matter what is going to happen, but have to talk.
But do you talk when you have no space? People are not talking in South Sudan. People are not talking, for example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo. People are not talking in Sudan. People are not talking in Uganda. People are not talking in Ethiopia, in Eritrea, in Cameroon. I can go on and on and on.
Shaka, this is talking. We are talking. And I want to encourage every person that is in the caliber that I'm in to start doing the same. Especially my brothers and sisters that are within the same profession, that have been given the opportunity to read and write, to start airing out these ideas in print.
Read and write.
Read and write.
Very, very interesting.
We have an issue of not even wanting to read as a population.
Very, very interesting. As a matter of fact, there is a gentleman who I'm sure you know about called Joseph Stiglitz.
Yes, yeah.
He is an economics professor at Columbia University.
Yes.
And he is a recipient of the Nobel Prize in Economics 2001.
Yes.
He worked at the World Bank. As a matter of fact, he used to be the chief economist.
Mm.
He talks about there is really no excuse for you, her, and me today, because according to him, in writing the book, he wrote a book where he talked about the paradigm shift. He says that the intellectual balance of power has been shifting in our favor.
Uh-huh.
In other words, we have no excuse, because for colonialism to happen, for example, our ancestors were made to sign documents or agreements
because
they did not even understand.
They didn't know how to
but
read.
But today, you can go to Harvard, you can go to Columbia, to the Sorbonne, to Oxford, to Cambridge, to anywhere, and read a paragraph. So why are we there? Why can't we take advantage of what Joseph Stiglitz calls the intellectual balance of power is shifting in our favor? You should read the book if you hadn't read it, Globalization and Its New Discontents. That is where I read that idea. What is the problem? Why can't we do it?
The problem is that we've been stigmatized by survival leadership. So there is need for new leaders to rise up. Leaders...
with guns?
Not guns. Intellectual leaders.
There are also so many intellectuals. Where are they? Where do we need them?
Well, they have been silenced.
By who?
By the survival leaders.
And by the gun, probably.
And yes. By the gun. But we should not be scared of the gun if you know how to write and read.
Now, someone surely should not be scared of the gun is my sister here, Rebecca. Yeah. You actually held the gun. What were your rank?
General.
You were a general. There you are. General Rebecca Nyandeng.
Yes. Yeah.
What happened? What happens when, in fact, you go to fight a liberation struggle, or you call it freedom, you know, freedom movement, freedom fight, and what have you? What happened when you seize power? Because, frankly, almost all these groups that seized power with AK-47, somehow, they seem like they feel there is a sense of entitlement. It is up to them. When somebody opposes them, they actually say, where were you when we were going to liberate the country?
Exactly.
But did they in fact liberate the country or liberate their stomachs?
No, they didn't. They didn't liberate the country alone.
They liberated what?
They liberated the country with the people together.
Uh-huh.
But when they get an opportunity to get there and the people think that they have leader, then they go and think about themselves, about their stomach. And I ask myself, is this small stomach a problem?
Really?
If you get yourself 50 million, is it not enough for your survival? Why the whole resources of the nation just for this small stomach? There are leaders in Africa who have acquired all the wealth of the nation, but they died afterward and left there, and left the resources. Then the living one did not learn from what happened. The dictators who were rulers in Africa went the same way, and one after another, they do not learn. Even when we talk about the books, we don't read. And actually, the white people say that if you wanted to hide something from African, put it in the book.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So because we don't read, we don't even want to give ourselves how to read. There are petty things which takes our mind away.
Very interesting.
And then, because like what is happening in my country, I have to come back to it, because I have to give example of what I know.
Very rich.
Coming to my country, what happened? We are leaders, and we are the one who were liberated yesterday. We are liberators.
You are a general, but how can you simply stand there and salute?
Today we came back here and we say that now let us sit down and put our house in order. But overnight, somebody have taken over the house. And now you will find the institutions of police and the army in his own hand. What do you say? You have to be killed. Some of our liberators, historical leaders, almost lost their life. They almost lost their life because they talk about change in our own party. We have to change so that we do what we call for during the struggle. We call for the liberation, a total liberation of our people. We call for development of our own country. Dr. John talked about South Sudan have never seen a tarmac road. Seen creation. And when we were there, Dr. John said that roads is in priority number one, priority number two, priority number three, number four. Roads. Connectivity. Because some of our problems as communities or tribes is for the lack of accessibility. Because you don't know what the other tribe is doing on the side of the mountain. So accessibility is number one. All of us, we were very angry. We went and picked up arms. You know, I lost opportunity. Now I have to liberate my children so that my children do not come to the same state I was in.
Right.
Now when we come back, we are the one who are oppressing them now. Our own children, we are killing them.
Jeez. Why?
And for some of the leaders, they are blind for the leadership. Even they go down with their own children.
Very interesting. Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, Don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiu Uwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question. Author Michael Kaluuya says in his book, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa, that Africa as a continent can do the same if Africans and their leaders take the opportunity to look forward and revolutionize the continent back into the hands of the people. This brings us to our question of the week, which asks, do you think Africa can fully transition from socialism into market-based economies? Let's start the conversation with our letter of the week from an audience member in Uganda. Our letter of the week is from Amos Mwesije from Kampala, Uganda. He writes, I think Africa can transition from socialism to market-based economies if we master the art of self-reliance, when we start to utilize our resources and potential as individuals and as a continent. We will surpass our expectations. We must learn to solve our own problems as Africans and take responsibility for our families, communities, and our countries on a continental level. Then, and only then, shall we see true development in Africa. Thanks, Amos, for your thoughts. And before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platform to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Africa Transition. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who writes, maybe only foreign investors will benefit and Africans will remain mere work hands. We have another tweet from Upano Godfrey, who says, yes, but when Africa gets its priority right, I mean, when the rulers practice deliberate political will. And our last one is from Otega, who tweets, we can get there if we unite for the interest of one united Africa. Now to a comment from Facebook fan Simon Ojour, who writes, it's possible for Africa to develop market-based economies, but key to that is infrastructure, good leadership, and peace. Without peace, it is very difficult to develop free trade. Well, Shaka, it looks like almost everyone agrees that it is possible, but there is a diversity of opinion when it comes to how. Your thoughts?
General Nyandeng Dimabior, your reaction.
They're right. In some cases, we have all the resources, and we should be saying that we are lucky as an Africans. God has given us the land and the people. We have good leaders, as you said earlier, but they are blindfolded with all these resources that we have. And if they wanted to develop all the resources, they have to develop the human resource first. Until after that, you can be able to develop the resources that you have. You find in some countries, people work with their hands, but you need to develop these people's small skills. You know, like what happened in Kenya, they have what they call Juakali, and even in Uganda.
Yes.
This is the backbone.
Katwe.
This is the backbone of the country. This is the backbone of the economy. But we don't do that because all the resources, like our resources in our country from 2005 until today, we don't even know the resources of oil, where did it go? And we had an opportunity to develop the country and the people in many resources. I'm surprised and shocked. Where did they put this money? Because if you steal, you invest them in the country. You steal resources, you invest them. Invest them on schools. You invest them on electricity, water, bring water to the people, the sons of and daughters of that country. You should do that. But our money are taken outside the country. How can we develop the country and the people when the resources are obstructed and then taken outside the country? So really, what they're saying, it can work if you have leader, because what happened in Africa is lack of leadership.
Interesting. Ayen, do you have more Facebook or Twitter reaction?
Yes. In fact, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Lino Yabuan, who says it is possible to develop market-based economies if there are strong institutions in the country and free democratic systems where everything is debated by the parliament and approved by a parliament which is elected by the people, not selected by the president. And our last Facebook comment comes from Onyat Benedict Roman. He says, market-based economies in Africa are possible as long as the government introduces legal regulations to stimulate entrepreneurship and development. Again, another round of very interesting thoughts. Over to you.
What about you, Professor Kaluya?
I would jump into this with the idea that I addressed a few things in this book about backward Africa. And my main idea here is that the Berlin Wall was broken, but we have not a physical wall in Africa, but we have these walls that are connected to the mind.
Attitudes?
Attitudes.
Mindsets?
Mindsets. Mm-hmm. So we need to liberate the mind. How do we do that? Is the education system in these African economies adequate to address the needs of the Africans? Are there skills that are needed right now that we have not even developed? Is the government, even in the interest of helping the citizens to equip themselves with the skills that are going to enable them to venture into the new economies? Because we have the oil, we have the resources, we have the beautiful people. By the way, they are very beautiful people in Africa. But the mind is closed. And the mind has been closed by what I keep on emphasizing, that we have a system of survival leaders and not revival leaders. Because revival leaders develop the citizen. They develop the citizens with skills. They develop the citizens with patriotism for their country, not for their stomachs. They teach the citizens to look after what they can do for their country and not what their country can do for them.
Very interesting. You invoke, of course, one great American president, JFK.
Yes.
Ask not what I can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Yes.
Very interesting. Thanks, Ayen, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate with us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa, and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, U.S. President Donald Trump has made his first phone calls to African heads of state, speaking with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and South African President Jacob Zuma. an in-depth discussion on the expectations of the president's engagement with Africa. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and our discussion today is about Africa's fundamental problems and African solutions. Our distinguished guests are General Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabio, a South Sudanese politician and a former advisor to the President of South Sudan, and Dr. Michael Kaluya, author of The Audacity to Change, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa. He's also a professor of economics at Tarrant County College in Fort Worth, Texas. Again, Rebecca and Michael, frankly, I have to say, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much for having us. And media is a very strong weapon
for
the people. This is what is nearer to the people, and you are doing a very good job.
Profoundly honored, and for your compliments, General. Now, let me, of course, I have to say, General, and I defer to you really because I was only a lieutenant. Now, very interesting, we talk about power. What about the manner in which power is exercised in Africa, as probably opposed to power being exercised here? Because power in Africa seems to be through, quote-unquote, authority. Somebody who is older, somebody who is higher in position and what have you, but not reasoning. Whereas here, reasoning is very, very important.
Yes.
What about that?
You can see how difficult it could be for some of the leaders who could climb the ladder of leadership if they do it the same way they are doing it here. Some of those leaders who are ruling us now, they will not find an opportunity to climb that ladder.
Very true.
Because what they wanted, you know, what happened is that what I have seen and what I have observed is that they just wanted to go there so that they loot. They wanted to go and enrich themselves. And you find some of them bringing their relatives around them. And you find in some places, like here with us, you go to embassies, you find these are my people. And you find everywhere is these are your people. What about those who do not have leader?
Embassies, in fact, cater to the leadership of African leaders, really.
That's right. And what about those who do not have? And it is a cycle. And then the other leader comes and says that, okay, that leader, when what he did last time, I wanted to do it again, bring my people. Instead of you, if you are angry, why don't you change what happened? What happened should be changed by you who is not happy with what was done by the previous leader. And the situation in Africa, if we do not learn from one another, this Berlin Wall will not fall down. Like, for example, if you talk about what happened in ECOWAS, there's a Berlin Wall falling.
We're talking about the Gambia.
The Gambian and ECOWAS leaders.
Yeah, Jame.
And the leaders of ECOWAS. And I appreciate and I thank Yaya Jame. He left without a drop of blood of his people. We talk about the money that he has taken.
The Rolls Royce?
Yes. But these are not the life of people. Those things can be recovered.
Correct.
But the life of people can never be recovered. So for him to leave, he's a very courageous man. But there are some of the leaders who have seen what is happening. They are not learning. Our leader, former leader who have died, Mwalimu Julius Nyerere.
Yes. Oh, great man.
A great man. He has given us example.
Great
we are
man.
Not learning from it.
Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana.
Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana.
Kenneth Kaunda of Zambia.
And still living. They are there, all of this, and we are not learning. And that's why I was saying before, they are blindfolded or overwhelmed.
The Madiba.
Because they don't have confidence of leadership. If I have confidence of leadership, I will know what to do.
You know, there is a saying that no society gets a leadership that it desires.
And that's why they die early.
That you get a leadership that you deserve. And when you talk about the manner in which, for example, some of these people get to the top, when you see where some of these people came from, maybe that is where the problem is.
That's right.
We're talking about somebody coming from quote-unquote abject poverty. If somebody comes from abject poverty, and I'm not talking about material wealth and what have you,
That's
I'm talking
right.
about values.
That's right.
What do you expect? The person, frankly, spends the next decade or so trying to, in a way, prove that he is something that probably he is not. So I think
that's right.
Psychologists, I think they call it compensatory consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Compensatory consumption. Those are psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
And sociologists call it, there is something else the sociologists call it, but I think compensatory consumption is good enough.
Mm.
But surely we should be in a position where we have some sort of inbuilt checks and balances.
Yeah.
For example, we have countries where you talk about there are three organs of government, mm-hmm. three branches of government. There
pillars.
Is the chief executive.
Yes.
There is the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
There is the judiciary. Mm-hmm. And yet, in most of these countries, frankly, it is the executive that controls them.
That's right.
So how do you expect to get checks and balances or accountability for that matter, Professor?
It is the population has not demanded for these checks and balances. As a population, African population, I keep on emphasizing, we have to do exactly that. Demand that the leaders we elect focus on the checks and balances. We
it
have
is a
parliament.
Social contract.
It's a social contract.
Mm-hmm.
The MPs, the members of parliament.
Who is the boss?
The members of parliament, the boss is the person, the people that is bringing you to power.
The sovereign.
So you need to report to that person.
Didn't you hear recently that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni actually publicly stated that he is not anybody's servant, that he is a freedom fighter? What does that mean?
It means he's not up for the task. The time has gone for this kind of talk to be there in our governments, the so-called governments. If you subject yourself to an election, then you're a servant across the board.
So then what do you think about the Ugandan people themselves, Frank?
The Ugandan people need to speak out across the board.
How do they speak up?
They need to speak out through their representatives.
Which representatives?
The members of parliament, because they elected them.
You know as well as I do that most of those members of parliament, in fact, owe allegiance to the chief executive.
Then we don't vote them back again.
Because the chief executives give them money. How did they change the constitution in 2005? Not more than $3,000 equivalent that was given to each member of parliament.
Mm.
And that is how they made the decision.
My problem is that we have, this again brings me to leadership. We have three levels of leadership, and I address that in the book. We have what we call operational leadership, and we have what we call transactional leadership, and the transformational leadership. Transformational leadership is where we have the head of state, whose work is to be a visionary person. We have the transactional leaders. This is where you are going to find the permanent secretaries and the managers, the directors, and so on and so forth, who are supposed to help to carry out the vision of the transformational leader. We have the operational leaders. These are the day-to-day work. Type this, do this, account for that. The problem is, the transformational leader has become an operational leader, has become a transactional leader, and has no accountability at all from anybody.
Has become a presidential monarch.
That definitely.
An emperor.
Definitely. So no accountability whatsoever. So as a people, we have to speak out on these kind of things. We have to say, you are no longer a transformational leader. You are a transactional and operational leader.
What about the generals that serve this person blindly? The generals, 4-star,
yeah,
3-star.
Mm.
Well, let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Ashaka.
Terrific. How are you, my man?
Good evening, sir. That's Patrick Okrafor here in R2. Good evening, our guest. Mr. Shaka, I want to find out from our guest. You see, the market economy we are talking tonight, in Africa today, we are more of producing the raw materials without enhancing them. The miners we are talking about, but used for GSM and laptop. Now we come to Nigeria, you see what is happening. Nigeria produces crude oil, but we end up importing the petroleum products from other countries. Does it mean that in Africa, that we don't want to, that is take a risk, which other people are taking? Now, look at China. A small boy in China manufactures GSM with his own knowledge, fabricate everything. But here today in Africa, we produce the raw materials and we send them. Why is this so?
Thank
Does
you.
It mean our own knowledge is different from that one from outside? Thank you very much. Patrick Okrafor is my name here in Nigeria.
You're most welcome. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Tafa from Ghana?
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific, my friend. How are you? What is your question?
I'm good, Shaka. Shaka, you remember when Ghana got independent, you remember what Kwame Nkrumah told Ghanaians? He said, from now on, we are no longer under colonial rule. We are independent and free people. So we should do things, we should change our mindset. But Shaka, the question is that, have you changed our mindset? I'll give you one example of Uganda, your country. You have a leader who told his people that the more I stay in power, the more I got experience. And these people, majority of them are still languishing in object poverty. Millions of, tens of millions of them are still suffering. But they listen to him. Anytime he called them, they ran to him to protect him or vote for him. Chaka, that is our problem.
Thank you.
Let me tell you what.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Tafa, please, because there are so many other people who would like to talk, frankly. Thank you. Good evening, Alfred from Algeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. Good evening, studio guest.
How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Liberia, West Africa.
Liberia, not Algeria. Yeah, I see. Yeah, Liberia. What is your question, please? One minute.
I want to say something to we Africans. We need to, let me commend a studio guest for what she said. We need to develop the mind. Because what is going on right now in Liberia, our election is 2017. Can we imagine people are cracking one from one end to another just to cast ballot for them? And the thing about it, if the only is you have won as a representative or senator, stay for broken years. You work to satisfy yourself, not to satisfy Liberians. And then Ghanaian Salih got in power since 2006. Since 2006, nothing Liberian even came on.
Thank you.
Nothing Liberian. People are living in actual poverty in this country.
Thank you, Alfred. Thank you so much. I think your point is well made. How do you react, General?
The first question is about the raw materials.
Adding value. We already
adding
talked
value.
About that.
We talked about that. Yeah. And you know, the problem is that we as leaders, we look at the money.
Yeah.
We want a shortcut.
Right.
So that we reach the money quickly. We don't look at the process.
Investment.
Investment where you can add value and then you get more money.
Mm.
But whenever they see the money, they don't care about all these other avenues of process and whatever. They just wanted to get the money directly.
Mm.
So we need to know that. Talking about the questions of our leaders, like Kwame Nkrumah, he was a wise leader.
Terrific.
He's a very wise leader, and he knows what he was saying. He was a visionary leader.
Great visionary.
Yeah, but the problem is that some of the leaders, they come as a visionary leaders, but the more they stay, they lose what they have, because everything had a short leaf.
Because, according to sociology, my friend, they partake in conspicuous consumption.
Hmm.
Let me ask you perhaps the last question, Professor Kaluya. You raise in your book the concept of abundant mentality and scarcity mentality.
Hmm.
What can you tell us about that in 1 minute?
I address that in the book in a view of of what I've read about these two concepts. I've lived in the developed world for quite some time now, but I've also lived in the underdeveloped world for some time, mm-hmm. because that's where I was born.
Mm.
It turns out that the developed countries have this idea of abundance mentality. They think that everything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
They feel that everybody can do something.
Mm-hmm.
They feel that if I put my hands on something, it can succeed.
Mm.
The caste mentality, on the other hand, is more or less associated with the underdeveloped world.
And especially when we are growing up, someone might ask you, what would you like to be when you grow up? You can say, a pirate.
I want to be a
and
doctor.
And they say, who the hell do you think you are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see?
And here they say, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it. You can be whatever you want to be.
Exactly.
In Africa or in the developing world, you can't be something because somebody has said you can't be it.
Authority.
Okay?
Authority.
And for me to succeed in Africa, it means that somebody else has to fail.
That is correct.
Okay? That is the idea of caste mentality. We feel that the glass is already full. Nobody else can partake of it.
So the glass basically is empty.
The glass is supposed
half empty.
It's supposed to be half empty in the developed world.
Here it is half full.
Here is half full because everybody has something.
What about, General, what about the things that you think the diaspora, the African diaspora, for example, should do that is not doing right now? There are a lot of Africans across the diaspora.
You know, our African diaspora, and I can talk about our diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1 minute.
They are affected by what we do at home. They are affected by what the leadership and their tribes is doing at home. Instead of them seeing what they can benefit from here, from this well,
mm-hmm.
you know, well of freedom,
mm-hmm.
and well you can do whatever you wanted to do, and you sleep without fearing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want it to learn. They wanted to put their ears listening to what we are doing in Africa. And these things is affecting them here. They would have done a lot if they are focusing to come and educate themselves so that they can be alternative of tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
for these leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But they put their ears too much to us of what we are doing, and it is spoiling them. So I don't see our diaspora here can do a lot. Unless we are doing better at home, then our diaspora will do better. You see, that's how I look at it, because when I see it, and then also not only that, they don't even come here. Some of the leaders come to New York and they move from New York going back. They don't look for the diaspora. So then they talk to them. You develop human beings not only by food, but
true.
By words, as the Bible says.
Well,
the leaders should be calling them and talk to them.
Unfortunately, General, and of course you know it very well,
yes.
because of the military discipline,
time
is not our best ally.
Thank you.
On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabio, a South Sudanese politician and a former advisor to the President of South Sudan, and Dr. Michael Kaluya, author of The Audacity to Change, Breaking the Berlin Wall in Africa, who is also a professor of economics, Tarrant County College in Fort Worth, Texas. Thanks to our affiliates, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.